Blog Talk Radio.
Listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am your host, Becky Noble. Thank you, everybody, for joining me this morning, hanging out with me today, TGIF. People, the weekend is upon us. It couldn't get here quick enough. I'm sure everybody is, there's a lot of people out there feeling the same way. It could not happen soon enough. Of course, we have a ton of stuff to get to today. We've got Iowa, we've got New Hampshire, we've got Democrat debates and town halls. We've got, oh my God, we are loaded for bear today, people. And as usual, there is never a dull moment here at Conservative Cauldron Radio. And you can call in here. The number is 347-857-2620. 347-857-2620. And of course, the chat room is open as always, and you can go in there and talk about whatever you want to talk about. But before we get started, on a personal note, a little bit of personal housekeeping, I would like to give a shout out and a big fat happy birthday to my other half. My husband, Randy Noble, is celebrating his 60th birthday today. And it's been a little rough for him this week. He's not sure how he feels about turning the big 6-0, but he seems to be okay today. So I just want to shout out and tell him happy birthday, and he will have a wonderful day, and we will be celebrating this weekend. So there is a lot of stuff going on, and let's get to it. Of course, we kicked off the presidential primary season this week in Iowa, and, you know, for political geeks like myself and those of you who are out there, you know that this is when the rubber meets the road, baby. This is it. This is fun time for us. And it's like Christmas and our birthday all rolled into one, and people kind of look at us and go, oh, my God, could you be a bigger dork? No, we could not, actually. We could not be bigger dorks. We love it. And but, you know, on a more serious note is that, yeah, you know, people can tease us about being political geeks and things like that. But, you know, people say this every election cycle, it seems, but this is so much different. After 7 years of Barack Obama and several years of hugely massive uber liberal policies from the Obama administration, this is going to be an election like no other. And I don't want to be a drama queen and be all melodramatic, but it really and truly is a fight for our nation. It's a fight for our nation in its present form. Oh, you know, you can say the economy and healthcare and pick an issue, immigration, you know, pick an issue, and yes, it can all be better, and that's the point. But beyond that, the values and the ideals and the traditions and the institutions that the majority of American people hold dear, all these things are at stake because they're not being taught in public schools, and young people are not only being taught the values and the ideals and the institution that make this nation the greatest nation on the face of the earth, but not only are they not being taught, so therefore they don't understand the nature of the importance. And it really truly is literally a a fight for the nation. It's a fight for our nation right now as we know it in our present form, in its present form. And so we kicked off that fight this week in Iowa. And, you know, how many weeks did we spend before the Iowa caucus listening, be it on TV, on the internet, on the radio, what have you, all of the pundits, all of the commentators, all of the experts, all of the talking heads, and looking at all the polls and the conventional wisdom, and it's so conventional wisdom is so not conventional because 9 times out of 10 it's wrong. That the conventional wisdom was Donald Trump was gonna win this. He was up, I believe the last thing I saw prior to the Iowa caucus was he was up by 4 or 5 points. It was close. It wasn't a landslide, but he was up by a few points and really, if you looked at all the polls, he had the chance to eke it out. And but that was not the case. Ted Cruz took the Iowa caucuses on Monday night, and again, it kind of proved all of the, you know, when you want to talk about poll numbers, usually I'll tell you on a note of honesty here, I usually get most of my poll numbers from Real Clear Politics. And traditionally, Real Clear Politics is a great website to get those kind of poll numbers from. But what they do is they average together a whole bunch of polls. If you go on there, oh, my God, there must be 50 polls. Everybody and their brother takes presidential polls. And so that's kind of what they do is they average them all out. So I'm not placing blame on them. But so many of all of these polls were wrong. And I believe I heard Sean Hannity bring up a point the other night that this isn't the first time that this has happened, that poll numbers like this have been wrong going back, I think, maybe to the 2000 election cycle. And, you know, you can even go look as far as back as 1980 in the general election between Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan. And probably, I think, and I've heard this quoted several times, that probably a week out from that election, a lot of pollsters had Jimmy Carter up by 9 points, I think, beating Ronald Reagan. And, of course, we all know, thankfully, that was not the case. But I believe the final tally in Iowa for the Iowa caucus was 28-24 in favor of Ted Cruz. And on the other side, the Democrat caucus was even closer, and it was still up until a day later that they were still counting votes. And there was, you know, I think we've all heard at this point about the some of the precincts, some of these counties, that it was just so close to call that it was decided by a coin toss, and that lo and behold, Hillary Clinton won 6 coin tosses in a row. How can that be? Well, those of you who are better at math than I am and know a little bit more about odds and things of that nature can in fact do the math and come to your own conclusions. I think that there was a little bit of eyebrow raising over that. But the other thing about Iowa was that on the Republican side, it was record breaking. Literally, it brought out, I believe the number I saw was 180,000 Iowans to caucus, and it broke the record by a pretty good margin. And that made Ted Cruz the recipient of the highest number of votes in an Iowa caucus ever. So I think that fact alone, and one of the things also, you know, the media being the zombies for the Democrat Party, the obedient water carrying zombies for the Democrats. You know, Ted Cruz was the first Hispanic American to win an Iowa caucus, but you're not going to hear him talking about that on CBS or NBC or ABC or PMSNBC or CNN or any of the other alphabet stations. They're not going to talk about that because they they have to, it's in the playbook, it's in the template to keep the narrative of Republicans and conservatives being racist, sexist, bigoted, homophobes. They have to keep that going. And especially now with a presidential election coming up, oh yeah, that has to be done. But so Ted Cruz won in Iowa on Monday night. Donald Trump came in second. And again, it was fairly close. It was 28-24. Florida Senator Marco Rubio came in third with 23%. And there were a total of 30 delegates that are awarded in the Iowa caucus. And Ted Cruz got 8, Marco Rubio and Donald Trump 7. Ben Carson came in with 3, and Kentucky Senator Rand Paul and former governor, Florida Governor Jeb Bush came in with 1 apiece. Well, since Iowa, of course, we know that several people are no longer campaigning, and that, of course, the first one, I believe, to drop out actually was Monday night, was former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee. And, you know, I think we can, most of us can agree that Mike Huckabee seems like a great guy. He seems like a nice guy, that he's just a fun, all-around good guy. But I don't think he's presidential material. The next to go, I believe, was Kentucky Senator Rand Paul, and he is now going to concentrate on his senatorial campaign in Kentucky. And so he will be busy with that. And I believe this on the same day that Senator Rand Paul dropped out, also former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum also called it quits. And so we're already down 3 now. And there will be another debate tomorrow night, which is actually, this is probably some really good, it's really good timing between these two contests, between Iowa and New Hampshire. And the field is narrowing, and so that also means that there are more time for people to speak and to get their message out and to talk about the issues that are important to them, and gives the voters a chance to really get to know them a whole lot better, because with a field of at one time 17 candidates, it's hard to get everybody's voice heard at the same time. But I'm going to take a call right here very quickly. Hi, you're on with Conservative Cauldron Radio. Who am I talking to?
It's Justin.
Hi, Justin. How are you? Thanks for calling. What's up?
I'm doing pretty good. Well, I got an idea, the way that you could really know about these candidates is find out who is paying for their, you know, their campaigns, who they're
right.
taking money from. When they're doing their campaigns, because in all reality, they're really being bought out. I mean,
there's a lot of people that think that you're not the only person that thinks that. I think that there's a lot of people that think that, you know, that the election is just all about money, and that they are all being bought.
And I honestly think that we should be able to see who is paying for their campaign, you know, the NRA or, you know, or whatever have you. I would just like to know who is paying for their campaigns before I actually consider voting for them.
Well, that's a good point. That's a good point. I think Americans have the right to know, who's donating money. And I could be wrong, and somebody else can certainly call in and correct me. But I think when these campaigns, when they give their financial statements, there may be a rule that they do have to disclose where they're getting money from, who their donors are. It could be that there's like a certain level, you know, that if you give, you know, up to, you know, X amount of dollars, that they do have to disclose who it comes from. Or if you're just, you know, a regular man on the street and you give $20 or $30 or whatever it is, they don't really have to disclose that, but they do have to disclose the big money. But I, like I said, I could be wrong. I'm not up on all the campaign finance laws. But, yeah, you do have a good point. You do have a good point that Americans have the right to know where the money is going, and especially when you have people like Jeb Bush. I mean, my God, he's spent, what, millions and millions of dollars in Iowa alone, you know? And, yeah, you got a good point. You do have a good point.
Yeah, and
so
I'm trying to figure out with Cruz. With Cruz, because Hillary Clinton right now, you know, she's talking about budgets and economics. And Cruz
right.
comes behind her and says that he's lived on a budget. But I've never heard him disclose what type of budget is he talking about. Because when he talks
yeah.
about his family, he grew up on a budget. Well, what is a budget to him is my question.
Sure. Sure.
You know,
yeah,
I mean
that maybe yeah, that's another great point, and maybe that goes to some transparency. You know that if people are going to, and I really haven't heard anybody do it, but if you're going to talk about Donald Trump self-funding and using his own money for his campaign, and you know, talking about growing up in a well-to-do family and things like that, that that's another. You're bringing up some great points, Justin. Yeah. Thanks for calling in. Thanks for listening, and thanks for being out there, and keep on listening. Thank you for calling.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, I think that Justin does bring up some good points there, that people do have the right to know where the money is coming from, and like I said, especially for people like Jeb Bush, and it really doesn't matter where Jeb Bush is in the polls, but you know, we've heard of the millions and millions of dollars that he's spending just in Iowa alone. And when candidates talk about being on a budget and things like make them explain and make them explain whether or not it's Ted Cruz, whether it's Donald Trump, whether it's Ben Carson, whether it's anybody. Yeah. Make them elaborate on that have them explain what does being on a budget mean to them, and what would as president and America being on a budget, what does that mean to them? Yeah, those are some great points. But before I have to take a break here, I want to gonna play a little bit of it's kind of a lengthy clip, but it was good because I think, and I haven't heard a lot of people talk about this, but I think that one of Ted Cruz's best strong points is I do think that he is a really great speaker. I think that he is very eloquent. He thinks very quickly off the top of his head, and he doesn't need a teleprompter to speak to every crowd of people that he speaks to, like other people that we know of. But here's a little bit of, like I said, it's a little bit lengthy, but here's a little bit of Ted Cruz from Monday night.
Tonight is a victory for courageous conservatives across Iowa and all across this great nation. Tonight, the state of Iowa has spoken. Iowa has sent notice that the Republican nominee and the next president of the United States will not be chosen by the media. Will not be chosen by the Washington establishment. Will not be chosen by the lobbyists, but will be chosen by the most incredible, powerful force where all sovereignty resides in our nation, by we the people, the American people. Tonight, thanks to the incredible hard work of everyone gathered here, of courageous conservatives across this state, we together earned the votes of 48,608 Iowans. To put in perspective your incredible victory that you have won tonight, that is the most votes ever cast for any Republican primary winner. Tonight is a victory for millions of Americans who have shouldered the burden of 7 years of Washington deals run amok. Tonight is a victory for every American who's watched in dismay as career politicians in Washington, in both parties, refuse to listen and too often fail to keep their commitments to the people. Tonight is a victory for every American who understands that after we survive 8 long years of the Obama presidency, that no one personality can right the wrongs done by Washington. The millions who understand that it is a commitment to the Constitution, to our shared insistence that we rise and return to a higher standard, the very standard that gave birth to the greatest nation that the world has ever known. To the revolutionary understanding that all men and all women are created equal. That our rights do not come from the Democratic Party or the Republican Party or even from the Tea Party. Our rights come from our Creator. And the federal government's role, the federal government's responsibility is to defend those fundamental rights, to defend us. And while Americans will continue to suffer under a president who has set an agenda that is causing millions to hurt across this country, I want to remind you of the promise of Scripture. Weeping may endure for a night, but joy cometh in the morning.
That was a little bit of Iowa caucus winner Ted Cruz on Monday night giving his victory speech to his supporters. And, you know, a lot of his support has come from people who identify themselves as evangelicals. And, excuse me, whether or not that group of people will be as heavily represented in New Hampshire, I'm not so sure. But it really was a good portion of his support in Iowa came from people who identified as evangelical Christians. And also one of the things that is illustrative of Ted Cruz's victory on Monday night is goes to the importance of what a fantastic ground game that he has and a phenomenal organization, boots on the ground that he has built up and that he has going on. I would assume that he has the same thing going on up in New Hampshire, and you know, we will see on Tuesday night whether that again pays off for him. Right now, the polls are showing Donald Trump in the lead, but I am going to take a quick break, and when I come back, we will wrap up Ohio. It's Friday. We will wrap up Iowa. We will hear from Donald Trump when he spoke to his supporters on Monday night. And I got a lot more to get to. A little bit about San Francisco and the Super Bowl and homeless people. So there's a lot more to come. Don't go away. Stay right where you are. I will be right back. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio.
At my door, I've seen your face somewhere before, and I've seen your light shining on me. I know your face, I know who you are. You're lonely. I'm so far away. My life like I wanted to.
We're back. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am your host, Becky Noble. KJIF, my people. I know that it gets a little iffy there in the middle of the week, and you don't know if you're going to be able to make it, but here we are. The weekend is upon us, people. Hope you have some great weekend plans. Hope it is nice and sunny where you are, like it is for us here in St. Louis today. We are talking about lots of things, of course, all things presidential, the Iowa caucus, in which Ted Cruz came out the victor on Monday night, and now it is on to New Hampshire. And, you know, New Hampshire is a whole other animal than Iowa is. And, you know, I've heard Rush mention it a couple of times this week that and you know, who knows how true this is. Maybe someone who's more knowledgeable of it can verify it. But what he said basically was that a lot of times that New Hampshire voters try to go out of their way to not be like Iowa voters. And actually that may be true in a sense that I do know that that a lot of people think that New Hampshire being a New England state and an East Coast state that you know the place would be filled with liberals, but and yeah, they have their fair share of liberals, but it also has a very large share of independents, and that, you know, whether that will be good for Donald Trump, whether or not it'll be good for Ted Cruz, whether or not it'll be good for Marco Rubio, he's moving up in the polls in New Hampshire, as is I believe Ohio Governor John Kasich. And again, New Hampshire is I don't want to say weird, but it's a unique place where really anything can happen. And I do have some poll numbers, but wrapping up Iowa, this was and you know, before I get to Donald Trump, I know that probably everybody saw this during Monday night's coverage, is that Marco Rubio actually was smart enough to be the first person to speak after the results came in. And he came in third, but he came in right behind Donald Trump. And you know, I think that most people would say that, yeah, he did do pretty well. And he was smart enough to be the first one to speak, I think. And, you know, he made it sound like that he was the winner. And I think everybody will agree that yeah, he had a good night. He had a great night, but you know, so I think it really is going to be, regardless of the results in New Hampshire, I think that after New Hampshire, it really is going to be much, much clearer that it really is at this point, 3-man race. Whether or not other people will suspend their campaigns, we don't know yet. It will remain to be seen after Tuesday in New Hampshire. But, while we're wrapping up Iowa here, this is a little bit of what Donald Trump had to say on Monday night after his second place finish in the Iowa caucus.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much. I love you people. I love you people. Thank you. Unbelievable. I have to start by saying I absolutely love the people of Iowa. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So on June 16th, when we started this journey, there were 17 candidates. I was told by everybody, do not go to Iowa. You could never finish even in the top 10. And I said, but I have friends in Iowa. I know a lot of people in Iowa. I think they'll really like me. Let's give it a shot. They said, don't do it. I said, I have to do it. And we finished second. And I want to tell you something. I'm just honored. I'm really honored. And I want to congratulate Ted, and I want to congratulate all of the incredible candidates, including Mike Huckabee, who's become a really good friend of mine. So congratulations to everybody. Congratulations. I want to thank all of the folks that worked with us. We had a great team, and we will continue to have a great team. And we're just so happy with the way everything worked out. And most importantly, I have to thank my wife and Laura and Eric and Vanessa and Don. They went out and they were doing speeches. And in fact, Don and Eric, I think you did about 6 speeches today. So I just want to thank my family. They have been so amazing and so supportive. And we've had every indication. We're going now on. We have a poll. We're at 28 points ahead, okay? New Hampshire, we love New Hampshire. We love South Carolina. And we're leaving tonight, and tomorrow afternoon we'll be in New Hampshire, and that'll be something special. It's going to be a great week, and we're going to be up here next week. And I think we're going to be proclaiming victory, I hope. I will say this. I don't know who's going to win between Bernie and Hillary. I don't know what's going to happen with Hillary. She's got other problems, maybe bigger than the problems she's got in terms of nominations. But we've had so many different indications and polls that we beat her, and we beat her easily. And we will go on to get the Republican nomination, and we will go on to easily beat Hillary or Bernie or whoever the hell they throw up there. Iowa, we love you. We thank you. You're special. We will be back many, many times. In fact, I think I might come here and buy a farm. I love it, okay? Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Thank you very much.
That was just a little bit of Donald Trump's speech on Monday night after the Iowa caucus and his second place finish. Quickly here before, we need to talk about Hillary and Bernie for just a minute. They did have a debate last night. I didn't watch it. I don't know how many of you can stomach that. It's hard to do. It's hard to do without creating health issues for yourself, like high blood pressure and things of that nature. But I do have some poll numbers here. They are from, of course, Real Clear Politics. And nationally, Donald Trump is at 33.2, Ted Cruz, 20.7, Marco Rubio, 13.3, Ben Carson, 7.8, and Jeb Bush at 4.5. In New Hampshire, it's not as close as it was in Iowa. Donald Trump is up in New Hampshire. He's up big. He's at 32%. Marco Rubio has pulled ahead of Ted Cruz at 15. Ted Cruz is at 12.6. John Kasich at 11.2, and Jeb Bush at 9.8. So there is some more back and forth that is taking place in New Hampshire that we didn't see in Iowa. And, I would gather that maybe by Sunday that there's going to be some final poll numbers come out or Monday, I guess, since we're talking about Tuesday. I was thinking Iowa caucus Monday, got that on the brain. But, by Monday, there may be some really interesting poll numbers that come out. I also have here, this is kind of our first look at South Carolina. And in South Carolina right now, Donald Trump is at 36%, Ted Cruz, 19.7%, Marco Rubio, 12.7%, Jeb Bush at 10%, and Ben Carson at 8.7%. On the other side of the coin here, nationally, Hillary Clinton is at 50.5%, Bernie Sanders, 37.2%. In New Hampshire, It's not even close, and it's been that way for quite a while now. Bernie Sanders is running away with it in New Hampshire. He is at 57% to Hillary Clinton's 36.5%. And in South Carolina right now, it kind of flips. It flips the other way with Hillary Clinton at 62% and Bernie Sanders at 32.5%. So, again, like I said, in New Hampshire, it's by Monday, I think there may be some really interesting poll numbers, and there may be some people up that we have not seen up that far percentage-wise in this race, and there may be some people that have been at the top of the heat that are down a little bit because, again, New Hampshire's a unique place, and they do have a lot of independents. But, you know, to show how all over the map that poll numbers can be, I saw this morning, this was from The Hill, there's a new Quinnipiac poll that is out, and nationally it has Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders much closer than the Real Clear Politics average. Right now the Quinnipiac poll has Hillary Clinton at 44 and Bernie Sanders at 42. And that's interesting because I think we all know that in the world of Hillary Clinton, that wasn't supposed to happen. Hillary Clinton was supposed to be all but coronated in this election cycle. It was owed to her. She had paid her dues. And, you know, part of that dues paying came from dealing with the horrible vast right-wing conspiracy. I personally would love to make T-shirts because I would wear one, and I would wear it proudly, member of the vast right-wing conspiracy. If anybody wants to get on that, let me know. But like I said, well, the Democrats debated last night for the tens of people that watched it. But they also, I believe on Wednesday night of this week, they had a town hall type meeting, a town hall type. And Hillary Clinton was asked about the infamous right-wing conspiracy, and here's what she had to say.
You mentioned attacks on the early 90s.
Right.
Do you still believe there's a vast right-wing conspiracy?
Don't you?
I'm asking you.
Yeah. It's gotten even better funded. You know, they brought in some new multi-billionaires to pump the money in. And look, these guys play for keeps. They want to control our country. Senator Sanders and I agree on that completely. They want to rig the economy so they continue to get richer and richer. They could care less about income inequality. They solve their consciences by giving big money to philanthropy and, you know, getting great pictures of them standing in front of whatever charity they donated to. But make no mistake, they want to destroy unions. They want to go after any economic interests that they don't believe they can control. They want to destroy our balance of power. They want to go after our political system and fill it with people who will do their bidding. I said today in Dover, you know, I don't think all of the Republican candidates are so ill-informed about climate change that they say they don't know because they're not scientists. They're just doing the bidding of the Koch brothers. They're told, don't you dare say climate change is real because we're in the fossil fuel business. So this is exactly what they are up to. And, yes, it is probably – look, at this point it's probably not correct to say it's a conspiracy because it's out in the open. You know, there is no doubt about what they're doing and who the players are and what they're trying to achieve. And, you know, they're shopping among the Republican candidates to figure out who among them will most likely do their bidding. So just know what we're up against because it's real and we're going to beat it. But it's going to take everybody working together.
So the level of hypocrisy here is, I mean, we know with the Clintons that it knows no bounds. And that Hillary Clinton will do and say what she needs to do to get elected. And for her to talk about billionaires pumping money into the vast right-wing conspiracy when George Soros, of all people, is one of her biggest donors. I believe the number I saw maybe a few days ago on the Drudge Report was that he has given roughly $6 million to Hillary Clinton's campaign. $6 million. But she's going to have the nerve, she's going to have the audacity to talk about the Koch brothers and multi-billionaires and millionaires giving money to Republican candidates. And the other thing with that, too, is that, you know, the Clinton Family Foundation, the Bill and Hillary, Chelsea, whatever the hell they call it, the foundation – that foundation, first of all, don't think for a minute that money from that foundation and from Hillary Clinton's campaign is not all twisted and jumbled all up together, and it would take, oh my God, it would probably take astrophysicists to figure out what goes where and what money goes to the foundation, what money goes to the campaign, because it is all so intertwined and so intermingled. And I think it is common knowledge at this point. Well, it's common knowledge at this point, first of all, that the Clinton Foundation has taken money from countries like Saudi Arabia, from Qatar, from United Arab Emirates, from places that view women basically as second-class citizens. They view women as property, pretty much. And so Hillary Clinton trying to make herself the icon of women's rights and of women everywhere, and vote for me because I have a uterus and I would be the first woman president, that's not going over well, because we're seeing now that a lot of young women, millennial-aged women, they are running away from Hillary Clinton in droves. And that's where a lot of Bernie Sanders' support is coming from, is millennials, and that would include millennial-aged young women. Not only that, but they're finding out about all those 90s scandals, and they're finding out about how Hillary Clinton helped control the bimbo eruptions, and what she participated in destroying the lives of the women who came out and accused her husband of sexual assault and possibly rape. So that's not going over well. She can't play the victim card. She can't play the woman card. So now she's going back to the vast right-wing conspiracy. She's going to throw that up against the wall now to see if that sticks. And again, it's something that they're dragging out from the 90s that they're hoping that a lot of younger voters maybe don't remember. They weren't even born yet, or maybe they don't have any recollection. They were too young to know about the vast right-wing conspiracy. When they find out about the vast right-wing conspiracy theory, let's call it that, it's probably going to go the way of I think it's probably going to go the way of Hillary Clinton being able to play the I am woman, hear me roar, therefore vote for me card. It's going to go in the trash heap of the Clinton 90s. But I am going to take another quick break. We are going to come back. We're going to some other things here besides presidential politics. Yes, I know it's hard to believe, but we will get into a little bit of that. Stay right where you are. I have lots more to get to. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. Stay close.
I avoid.
We're back. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble, TGIF. We are, of course, talking about all things presidential politics, in that there's so much there to talk about. We're just getting into the just at the start, at the beginning of this primary season, and it's going to be fun. Going to be fun for geeks like me. But moving on from presidential politics to some other things, of course, you all, of course, be enjoying watching the Super Bowl this Sunday. And that is being played in California near San Francisco. What? I'm not a football person, so somebody can surely correct me. This is being played about 60 miles outside of San Francisco, I believe. But the city of San Francisco is not taking any chances, and they're moving homeless people out of places that they believe that are tourist attractions that they attract tourists, which many people will be there as tourists while they're watching the game, and they're moving them out of areas that are very heavily tourist attractions, and because we don't want cameras that are on this area, the cameras of the world on this area. By God, we don't want them to see homeless people now, do they? And this is a quote here from Jennifer Friedenbach. She is the executive director at the San Francisco Coalition on Homelessness. She says, quote, "When a lot of cameras are going to be pointed on the city, they want to have an image of the city that does not include poverty. They want to decrease the physical presence and reminder of poverty and create an illusion that poverty does not exist by removing poor people from the vicinity of the Super Bowl party." And she's right, basically. What's happening here is that this started on January the 30th. Access to the site will be controlled through 4 airport-style security checkpoints, including bag checks. The CBS television network will broadcast from the village, which is near Pier 32, which is near a pier, I'm sorry, where 32-year-old Catherine Steinle was shot to death last year. Oh, yes, that's right. You remember that. Supervisor Jane Kim said the message that she got from Mayor Ed Lee's office is that the city is specifically targeting the site for homeless services because of the Super Bowl. Kim criticized the city's estimated $5 million cost to provide support, including additional police, saying taxpayers shouldn't be on the hook for a corporate marketing event. The game itself will take place on February 7th at Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara, a Silicon Valley city 37 miles south of San Francisco. The quote here from Jane Kim says, quote, "We should be making sure that we're delivering services throughout the city, not just because of a special event, specifically to hide an issue for tourists and visitors that are coming in. We should be providing this type of compassionate, strategic approach all the time." And there is a quote here also from Christopher James, who is homeless, and he says that he has not been approached by any city officials, and if he were, he said he doesn't know where to go. He said the shelters are nasty and that they're just weird. And San Francisco, that liberal utopia, the 13th largest city in the United States by population, ranks number 8 nationwide in the number of homeless, and with an estimated 6,775 in 2015, with 64% living outside of shelters. And that is according to a report from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. So in order to make everything look nice and pretty for the Super Bowl, the city of San Francisco is, well, basically, let's call it what it is. They're clearing out the homeless people so that no one has to look at them. Also, let's see here. Quickly, Chicago's homicide rate soars after 51 killings just in January alone. That's just January, 50 killings. There's 31 days in January, so do the math, people. Chicago's homicide rate, this is a report from Newsmax. From USA Today, Chicago's homicide rate jumped to a 15-year high in January after authorities recorded 51 murders for the first month of the year. The homicide increase was a sharp rise from the 29 murders reported in January 2015 and 20 in 2013. This is according to USA Today. Overall, there were 241 shooting incidents in January and an increase from 119 such incidents last year. Again, Chicago, another gun-free zone liberal utopia. Also, while we're talking about the murder rate in Chicago, this is a quote from John Escalante. He is Chicago's interim police superintendent. Quote, the unacceptable increase in violence was driven primarily by gang conflicts and retaliatory violence. The Sun-Times noted that Chicago police officers have made significantly fewer stops in January, likely because of an agreement with the American Civil Liberties Union. Remember that. With the American Civil Liberties Union of Illinois requiring new documentation about encounters. Chicago officers have to fill out a two-page form after every stop, covering everything from traffic violations to investigations. Some officers told the Sun-Times they have avoided making stops they would have made in the past. The result, dubbed by the Sun-Times as the, quote, ACLU effect, is 79% fewer contact cards being filled out in January of this year than over the same time in 2015. We're avoiding all the gray areas, one sergeant told the Sun-Times, noting that the team he commands only made a handful of stops in January compared to dozens it made just the month before. So I would say that it is not only perhaps an ACLU effect, how about, a Ferguson effect? Speaking of the Ferguson effect, this will explain very quickly here that in an interview with the chairman of the South Carolina Democrat Party, Jamie Harrison, well, Eric Holder sees a lot of himself in, wait for it, the Black Lives Matter group. I see a lot of a younger Eric in them, full of energy with a real sense of mission. When you're young and not had huge amounts of life experience, you always think you're right. And I'm not being critical because this was me as a young person as well. I don't know about you all, but that speaks volumes to me. I have a few other things here I'm not going to have time for, and we will get into them, of course, next week. There's a little teaser for you. But one thing I do want to wear, oh, here it is, right in front of my face. Of course, without further ado, it is time for... In this week's WTF segment, WTF, two guys disguised as one person sneak into a movie theater. It was the ultimate two-for-one price of one swindle when a pair of buddies snuck into a movie theater dressed as one person. Bo Johnson and his friend Matthew Rotter got into a big pair of pants and walked into a movie theater where they managed to convince everyone that they were one large man. The friends documented their scam from start to finish. In video posted on YouTube, they showed how they dressed, practiced walking, and eventually pulled off the stunt. During the trick, Matthew latched on to Bo by holding him like a child. Accompanied by another friend, Bo walked around the theater as if he was an obese man. The stunt was a success, and they were able to buy one ticket and watch a movie. Matthew told Inside Edition that their outfit cost $60, but the reaction he's getting from the video made it totally worth it. So there you go. When you're complaining about the high cost of movies and you really don't want to pay that $15 for a movie ticket, well, YouTube apparently is a place to go to find out how to get around that. With that, I am out of here for today. Thank you, everybody, for joining me. Please go to theblacksphere.net, Kevin Jackson, myself, and lots of other awesomely talented people with a lot of things there for your reading pleasure, for you to peruse and consider. Please go to theconservativecauldron.blogspot.com. And also, brand new as of this week, please check out my brand new blog, renegadepoliticsblog.wordpress.com. Like I said, we're just getting up and going and started. But please, I got lots of big plans for this. So please keep checking it out and please going back and taking a look at it. Facebook.com/BeckyNoble and on Twitter @PatriotWitch. So please go there and give me a follow, give me a shout out, give me a holler. Everybody have a fantastic weekend. Have a great time this weekend, whatever you are doing, and I will see you next time.